I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Wars. Prepare for battle.
So, ladies and gentlemen, the legend that walks, Keith Williams, give him a round of applause.
Welcome, Keith. Sit down.
Oh, my God.
Take a load off. were you busy? Were you drawing?
Very busy, yeah. I just finished something up, yeah.
You literally just like...
Yeah. Just last second.
Oh, there's a deadline on.
Yeah, I always feel like that. It's just like, yeah, there's always a deadline. If it isn't this, it's like cooking or something else. Like, there's always a deadline.
Life always has a deadline.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
The microwave has a deadline. You all have deadlines. It's fine. So welcome. How are you enjoying the convention?
Oh, it's great. You know, the people here are amazing. You know, very friendly. You're enjoying it a whole lot.
Yeah. Have you met a lot of people?
Yes, I have. Yeah. Met some of the people that are sitting here
right now.
Right.
First of all, I like to ask, how did you get into comic books? Like, how, you know, what was your first comic
book? First comic book. My grandmother gave me my first comic book. It was a Batman comic.
She had good taste.
Yes, she did. You know, it had the red bat phone on the cover and had cobwebs on it. And that's what I remember the most of it. I'm trying to remember which number that is, but I can't. But it also had that checkerboard design
on top. I remember that, yeah.
On the top of the book. And that was my very first comic book that I had in my house.
So that's going back a long time.
A long time ago. Yes. You're talking about the 60s.
Wow, good stuff. Yeah. So probably fighting aliens and all sorts of things.
He might have been, back then he was.
That was a lot of...
Yeah, Batman Green, Batman Blue, yellow...
Separate Batman, Rainbow's Batman.
Yeah, right.
So was that the first character you kind of gravitated to?
Yeah, I did notice the Fantastic Four before that. Looking through the windows of some shops, they had the books, you know, like in the window. And I was like, what is that? You know, it's so weird, you know? But I didn't really pick up on it until after my grandma gave me that first comic. And then I was like hooked. And she kept getting me more comics. Every time she came over, there was another pile of comics. I think my parents were starting to regret that. You know? Then I started getting really interested in it. I wanted to buy some of my own. You know?
Well, at least it was a healthy addiction that you started with.
It was. Even though my parents might not fuck.
How did you get into the business itself? Like, when did that make you make that decision to make it a profession?
Oh, I wanted it to be a profession for a long time. Long time before I even became a comic book artist. Good grief. How did it start? Actually, in high school, I wanted to be an astronaut. I don't know. Drawing took over more and more of my time. And even though I love science and stuff like that, I wanted to, you know, like become a comic book artist. I like drawing. And my father drew, you know, like aunt, and I think I had just had it in my blood. So I was doing things in high school, school yearbooks, school shows, doing gigantic paintings on set designs and stuff like that for shows. Just kept doing the superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. I was going to become a paraprofessional at that school, and they really wanted me there because I was doing all this drawing and stuff, you know. Like, so they said, oh great, they got a guy, you know, that can do the school shows whenever we need him. But what happened was, at the same time, I ran to a person that's now a friend of mine's, Howard Perlin, who was the son of Don Perlin, who did Marvel Comics Werewolf by Night, Ghost Rider,
Moon Knight as well.
So he asked me if I was interested in seeing his dad, and I said yes. And the funny thing was that he didn't live that far away from me at the time. Live in Brooklyn, New York, the Flatbush section of Brooklyn, Flatbush, Canarsie area. And he was like two blocks away from me. So I was able to go to his house, show him some of my artwork that I had done. It was mostly ink work at that time. I was trying to become an inker. You know, like I wanted to be a penciler, but I became an inker because it was kind of easier. But then I found out how much it's not easy. Knew how to draw, so it helped me out to be able to repair, you know, like other pencilers' artwork. I was able to fix their artwork better than I was able to fix mine. So that's why I became an inker. He showed a few of my samples to Marvel, and there was an opening for a background position to do backgrounds, which is everything but the figures. You do back buildings, the cars, dogs, you know, like stuff like that. I said yes to that and started working at Marvel at night, and I was a paraprofessional at my old school during the day. Didn't work. It started not work too well because I was starting to get more and more background work to do. So when I would get off work from the school, which was like at around maybe 4 o'clock, I would get home, maybe have dinner, and then I'd have to start working on the background stuff to get done for Marvel. And most of that stuff would have to be needed the next day or the day after. Yeah. So I really didn't get that much sleep. I might have gotten like maybe 2-3 hours a night. It was getting really bad. When it got finally towards the end of the school year, I had to tell them that I'm sorry, you know, like I can't do the paraprofessional thing anymore. I must have looked horrible. I must have looked like a ghost or something. I don't know. Because, yeah, by that time. But I told them, you know, like, I'm sorry, this is my dream. This is what I really wanted to do. You know, so ended up starting to do backgrounds regularly for people like Joe Sinnott, Mike Esposito, Vince Coletta.
Kind of like the legends of, you know,
in that
field.
It was amazing, you know, like that I was able to work with these guys and my stuff was in print. I was doing, what was it at the time? I think it was Marvel Team Up.
Cool.
And that was Ron Frenz and Mike Esposito were working on that book at the time, Spider-Man books. And it was great, you know. Doing that and moving on, people like John Byrne were interested in doing backgrounds for him and doing Alpha Flight and the Hulk. And when he moved over to DC, I ended up working with him on Action Comics. Yeah, and which was really something. So it was really cool. I kind of worked on Superman. I never really touched the character I was doing. I was doing everything around the character.
Metropolis, Kansas.
Yeah. Smallville. Yeah.
Superman, you left.
All the stuff. And if John drew like a billion rocks on the ground, stuff like that, I was inking all those billions of rocks.
He does like his rocks, doesn't he?
He loves his rocks. He loves his computer stuff. It's crazy. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. But, working for that, I also, so that was like the start.
Yeah, so that was a beginning.
Basically.
But what a beginning. Like, where to go from just meeting somebody to the next thing. However, stay in school, kids.
Stay
in school.
Hey, I was in school until I was in college. I graduated college, went to School of Visual Arts in New York City, and I had Will Eisner as a teacher. Who did the Spirit comic strip. He was great. So I had him as a teacher for about 2.5 years at Visual Arts.
You did leave school, but you'd already attained your dream.
Yes.
So that kind of made sense, didn't it?
It did.
You're working at the highest level for a big company.
Yeah.
You know, on some of these big titles like Alpha Flight, Hulk. Do you do some X-Men as well?
I did do some X-Men background work.
Yeah, yeah.
Worked over some of Jim Lee's background.
Wow.
I'm telling you. Holy cow. You know, like I couldn't believe half the stuff that I was actually doing there, but it was so much fun. And I didn't live that far away from Marvel, so I was able to go up to the company and, you know, like hand in my stuff and talk to the other editors and see some of the other artists, the older guys, you know, like talk to them, and they would show me how they would do things. And
so you had literally the best mentors in the world, to show you your skills and to teach you. It's incredible. Like, you couldn't really ask for more, could you?
No,
like a childhood. That's like if I grew up with those kind of people and I met them, I worked with them and did work with them, that must have been mind blowing to you.
It was. it was every day. It never got old. Never got old. It's always fun.
I love this story. I love that story.
I mean, I may have been worn out after a while sometimes, but still, it was like the excitement of, you know, like being able to, you know, like work over these guys, you know, like work. Amazing.
Who was the hardest artist to kind of do backgrounds or inks for?
Inks for.
It was the most difficult.
Maybe Dennis Cowan, because he's very sketchy.
He is.
With his artwork. So it's like, I'm trying to think, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, like exactly, Should I keep it as sketchy as he does it, or should I try and refine it a little bit more? So you get a little nervous because you want the pencil to like you, you know, and you don't want to submerge his artwork with your inks.
No, of course.
You know, so, you know, you try and get to that middle ground and hope that he likes it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people had issues like inking Jack Kirby's work, didn't they? They didn't want to kind of ruin what he'd done.
Oh, wow, Jack Kirby. Yeah, that's... I would, with him, if his pencils were solid, I would just go right over what he has and not even
try. So did you ink any of Jack Kirby's work?
Oh, I wish. it was enough that we got to see some of his work when they brought it out of the warehouse.
Yeah.
At one point, and they displayed it up at Marvel. We were seeing these super twice up pages of artwork that was absolutely incredible stuff. It was amazing how much stuff they put into it. You know, like, went that big.
Would you say that kind of inkers and background artists are kind of the unsung heroes of comics?
Yes.
So
yeah, you know, like it's weird and it's kind of scary because we're the last thing that actually everybody sees. You know, like it's like even now people kind of like they look at some artwork that is done over blue line. You know, the inks are done over blue line, and they think that that's not really the complete piece of. Believe it or not, even when we used to get penciled work, we would ink over and then we'd have to erase the pencils. The pencil artwork is gone. All that's left is what we put down there in ink. So a lot of times we could make or break an artist.
Wow.
And a lot of times the artist would like to break our legs or our hands and fingers because we didn't do it exactly the way he might have pictured it being finished. But sometimes we would do things that change because it was right,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Or even the editor would come and whisper in our ears and say, yeah, try and, you know, fix this guy up just a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
And then when the pencil looks at it, what happened to my stuff? You know, you did this, you changed that. You know, it's not our fault. Yeah. You know, the editor, you know.
Yeah, well, the editor has final say, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
They want the book to sell, so
exactly.
If they want creative changes, it's collaborative.
Yeah.
Collaborative process.
It is. It
goes through many people.
It goes to a whole lot of people before it. Yes.
So can you, like, I personally don't know that much about inking comic books. Could you tell us your process and how you go about it?
Well, sometimes for me, it's like deciding if I'm going to use a brush or a pen on a person's artwork. Sometimes I use both. It just all depends. If the guy's pencils look more mechanical, I'll probably use more of a pen style and do more hard edge stuff. If it's more, you know, like of an organic kind of feel to it, I'll use a brush and, you know, get those round feelings and stuff and do a thick and thin line and things like that, you know, like to give the character life, you know, give the stuff life. What I would usually do when I get a page, and it's really weird, I would start off with hands sometimes, you know, like I would just start inking hands. And then I would start to get into things like the face and, you know, work my way around and stuff like that. I try to go from panel to panel to panel to panel, yeah, like that, you know, so that I kind of got an idea that it's done. And then you do mix it up sometimes, and then you just do all the figures, and then you would come back later and do the background, just so you don't get, you know, kind of like, it doesn't become tedious after.
No, it's like, yeah.
I mean, it's fun doing it, but it's like after a while, you know, you want your hand to do something else.
Yeah,
you know?
You're like cramping up and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. You get carpal tunnel. Yeah, you get that. That's,
yeah,
that's a lot of
fun. Gotta be careful. Do you have to do your, like, exercises or anything?
No, I don't. You know, like, there was a while that I did have to wear some, you know, like a brace around my hand and over here, you know, so that helped a little bit.
Yeah,
you know? But I've been a lot more careful.
Well, you know, we're all getting older, aren't we? So
yeah,
gotta keep exercising.
Yeah, I almost hit a crick in my breath. You know, yeah, it's telling me I'm getting old. But no, comic books actually keep you young. You know that.
Do
that and signing packs with Satan. No. No, you don't.
Kids, don't sign packs
with Satan. No, you don't do that. No.
So I'd like to talk about one of the characters you worked on for a really long time. Personal favorite of mine, the Phantom.
Oh, yeah.
So you were on it. You had a huge, huge run on that character, didn't you?
10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, from 1995 to 2005. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So quite a recent run as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Okay. Yes.
And how did you get onto the Phantom? Why did you stay so long?
Danny Fingeroff, who was an editor at Marvel at the time, he was doing Spider-Man books, and I was working on a Spider-Man. I was working on Web of Spider-Man with him until he fired me.
But then he gave you another job.
But he felt so bad that he gave me that he pointed me in the direction of King Features and Jay Kennedy, who was the person who was running the comic strip part of King Features at that time. And instead of asked me if I was interested in doing the Phantom or trying out for it. And I said, yeah, sure, why not? You know, went up to visit Jay Kennedy in the offices, and he talked to me for a little bit, showed me the strip, what it looks like and stuff. And then he said, you can go and talk to Lee Falk and, and, you know, like, see if he's, you know, like, likes what you're doing. You know, you talk to him about, you know, price and all that stuff, know, and see what happens. So I actually went to Lee Falk's apartment, which was on Central Park West, right across the street from the Hayden's Planetarium, on the 6th floor. Yeah. So you go into the building, you know, you tell them who you want to see, and they send you to this elevator. You go in the elevator, and the elevator stops on his apartment. I mean, it's his apartment. The door opens up, this little alcove.
Like a presidential suite.
Yeah, there's an alcove, and it has phantom pictures hanging on the walls. And then you knock on the door, and you go in, and that's his house. You know, that's where the private elevator goes, right up to his floor. That's it.
So the creator of the phantom literally has his own lair.
He has his own lair, yes. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yes, and you go in there, and you know, you have a beautiful view of the Hayden Planetarium. You can look down.
Yeah.
So we talked for a little while and showed him my artwork that I've had at the time, and which was mostly Spider-Man, Silver Surfer, and stuff like that. And he said, you're hired. You know, fine. You know, he also said that he had a deathly fear of spiders. So, of course, you know, showing him Spider-Man, I thought, geez. Okay, well. I lost that job.
It's not an actual spider.
No, it's not
an
actual
That'd be more terrifying.
Exactly.
More of a man spider. That would be pretty scary.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No.
He's got the six arms.
No, he just has, Or when, if you had that, that wouldn't.
That would be creepy. Yeah.
That wouldn't.
That's quite interesting. They're like, nobody really likes spiders. Everyone loves Spider Man. I don't know.
And I like spiders too. Okay. I'd rather let them go than kill them. So it was great. So they King Features would send me the artwork that was done by George Olson, who lived in Florida, and he would send it out to me, and I would ink it, and then I would send it to King Features. But then after a while, as technology grew, we started sending the stuff. I didn't have to send out the stuff anymore, and I basically had to scan it and send it to King Features that way. And that way I was able to keep artwork. And I was able to give some artwork to George Olson, who was the artist of the Phantom at that time for, like, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 years. He was working with Cy Barry, who was the guy that was, you know, like, did everything. But everybody had, like, people, you know, like, in there helping and stuff.
Yeah.
Lost my train of thought.
That's right. You were going digital.
We're going digital. Going digital. And I was able to give artwork to George Olson, who never got a page of Phantom, you know, like for himself. So, yeah. So we started splitting it up, you know, like every week. I'd get a week. He'd get a week, you know. And this way, everybody's happy. And he was able to send some of the stuff up to Norway and stuff like that, where I think they have like a museum or something like that.
What, like a Phantom museum?
Something like that.
Wow, amazing.
So.
That's pretty cool. Something I'll need to go to Norway and visit that.
Yeah, I want to go to Norway.
Cool. You probably got your own section.
I would love that.
I imagine.
Yeah, because the Phantom isn't really that popular in the U.S. as it is overseas and Australia and places like that.
Yeah.
It's very popular.
So what elements did you bring to your run of the Phantom? What did you change or what did you add?
I was really nervous at the beginning. I tried to look as much like Cy Barry as possible at first, because, you know, like, how do you top Cy Barry?
Yeah.
But then after a while, I started doing my own stuff. But it still had that flavor, because George Olson still had that kind of feeling of Cy Barry in his style too. So, you know, it didn't really change too much. I might have started going a little nuts and throwing a lot more shading and zips and things in there after a while, you know, but that's about as much as I think of a change.
So you kind of stuck to the set formula.
Yeah.
But that's not a bad thing.
Yeah, no.
If it works, it sells.
No, it works. Yeah.
Don't mess with it.
No, absolutely.
So I'd like to ask you about, I think somebody was talking earlier about Alpha Flight, that you mentioned well. I think Alpha Flight is one of the most kind of diverse teams in comic books. You have an openly gay character, a look person. You've got someone who's mentally ill, has split personalities. You know, you've got a Sasquatch.
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
This. So how important was it to work on a book that had such diversity in it?
It was great. I think that's the way it should be.
Yeah,
like
definitely.
In a lot of other books too, you know.
Because
like,
this was way ahead of its time.
Yeah,
before, like,
John,
you know.
Yeah, John did something that, you know, it wasn't even thought of, you know. It's like now they're saying, okay, with the Justice League, you got to add in, you know, like...
new characters.
Like either African-American or Chinese-American or Asian-American. You have to add these things in to make it, but John, he put in an international group of people, you know.
Why not? And like Canada is very, you know, it's got such a range of people.
Yes, absolutely.
And they're so unique as well. And I quite like, I've been reading the original run recently, actually. Coincidence.
I absolutely love it.
It's very much, every book is very solo, isn't it? It's like a solo adventure for each one.
Yeah.
They kind of come together around issue 12. I think,
right. They wanted to tell you, they wanted to tell stories. John's good at that, you know, like building up and so that you get a feeling, you get the feel for the character.
Mm.
If anything horrifying happens to them, like what happened to Guardian.
Guardian, when he went poof. Spoilers, Guardian died.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
I mean, we're talking, what, 20, 30 years ago now?
Yeah.
Spoilers, he did die.
That was horrible.
Quite violently. Yes. But he was replaced.
Yes, he was replaced.
Yes, he was. But yeah, no, I love it. And I think it was nice to, because before then, I think they'd only had kind of cameos in the X-Men books. So we never really got to view them as characters and with personalities and stuff. I think that book is... You know, it's fantastic for that, and John's an incredible artist
and storyteller. You know, he was one of those writing. I think the stories at that
time. Yeah, he was right. Yeah, I think he swapped with Bill Mantlo.
Bill Mantlo
swapped.
Yes, that's when they did the Hulk. Yeah,
that's right.
And right.
You worked on that.
Yes, I worked on. I followed John over to the Hulk. Yeah,
yeah. We were in the last panel we had. We talked to Al Ewing, who's currently writing the Immortal Hulk.
Right.
He was talking about his favorite Hulk runs and on the character, and he brought up the John Byrne run. And I said, well, Keith worked on that. I'm pretty sure Keith worked on that. You should talk to him. And he's like, that was one of my favorite runs. And, you know, the nutrient bath.
And they split them. They split them apart.
The Hulk, yeah. So, and Rick Jones, the sidekick, became the Hulk for a while.
Yes.
And then Bruce Banner came back as the Great Hulk.
Right. Yeah, the gangster Hulk.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. Joe Fixit Hulk. I love that.
Yeah, he was always something. Yeah, with the pinstripe suit. Yeah. That's great.
Everyone loves that Hulk. You know, that's my favorite. It becomes like a mafioso in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Yeah, Las Vegas. Yeah, this is so weird.
So weird and bizarre, but it works. Yeah. It's so weird.
You got this guy that can almost like move mountains, and he's there as a bouncer in a Las Vegas casino.
It's crazy. And he worked, but again, that lasted a lot. That storyline went on and on.
Yes, it did.
And I loved it. I thought so, I can't remember the artist's name, but he had a really unique look on the Hulk.
I think McFarlane had for a while, and
yeah, he had the big brow, didn't he?
Yes, yeah,
Neanderthal brow. Yes. I really like. Mm-hmm. It's kind of very Kirby as well.
And there was another guy. Yeah, that was. I can't remember his name either. But yeah, there was another guy that had a long run on there.
So had you drawn the Hulk before? Had you done any ink?
I almost had a chance to do the Hulk, but you know, I think I messed it up. That was early in my career, and I was doing Sectors at the time.
Sector. Oh yeah, was that
a toy line licensing thing? Yeah. Okay. So I was doing Sectors, and I was doing Transformers, two toy line things, and Transformers. Sectors, that was okay. But and that led me on to Web of Spider-Man.
I've got a personal link between you and me. I actually have Web of Spider-Man #1.
Oh,
with the Charles Vest cover.
Yes,
it's yeah.
Oh, that had you talk about deadlines. That had a deadline. that had a super tight deadline. It was so bad that it was due like maybe it might have been like 2 weeks before or a week before or something like that. We were up in the offices, and it was like a line of people working on it. I was doing backgrounds. Vince Carter was doing the inks. Greg LaRocque, I think, was the pencil at the time. He was doing the pencil. We were all up there because the book was light. It was the first issue, and the book was light. And we were all, you know, like rushing, trying to get this book done. Yeah. So we were there part of the night at Marvel, trying to just finish it. Letterer was there lettering the stuff when the stuff got out, you know, like, and I was there doing backgrounds and stuff. And Vince was there, you know, like just inking, and he's like super fast when he wants, and he's like flying through the pencils like crazy. Inking.
That book is if you don't know everyone knows the Spider-Man black suit, yeah? So you know the scene in the Spider-Man 3, whether you like it or not, you know the scene where he's trying to get the suits off and he's fighting, it's the bell tower, ding, 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 ding. That was in that book. That was in Keith's book. So that is now an iconic sequence. I first saw the version of that in the 90s Spider-Man animated series.
Oh, yeah.
Same thing, thing. And the bell, he's in the bell tower again, and that's become so iconic. Like, that's just, it's still used, like, even, I think there's kind of a similar thing in the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon, just keeps popping up. Like, how does it make you feel to be part of those, like, iconic moments that are now reused again and again and again?
Oh, it's great. I was actually... At the time when we were doing all the fixing and stuff like that and trying to put that book together, I was the assistant editor on that book at the time with Jim Owsley, who's now Christopher Priest.
Yes, that's right.
Who did the Black Panther.
Oh, what a book. What a book.
You know, like in the movie and all that stuff. Yeah, just exploded. Yes.
Crazy.
Yeah. But it was great being part of all of that stuff.
Yeah.
I was there also for when he did get the black suit.
Yes.
I was the assistant editor at the time on that, where he went into the Arch, and then in the next issue, he came out of the Arch, and he was in a black outfit.
So yeah.
So you know, then you had the Secret Wars stuff that you had to buy to read to find out how all that happened. You know, like, so it was
very much like, it was the kind of a lot like the original kind of Amazing Fantasy, wasn't it? But he was in the black suit.
Yeah.
This is the new Spider-Man.
Yes, yes.
People
Ron
are like,
Yes. Yeah.
I've got a question. There's a rumor that the black suit, the Spider-Man black suit, was created by a fan who sent it in and was paid for the design. About, I think it was like something like $2,000, something like that.
Anything's possible. I didn't hear this story.
It's a rumor. Nothing's verified. I just wonder if you had it.
I'm not totally sure, but you know, that was a great design because I had a T-shirt like that for a while. Yeah, I love that.
It's iconic. It's an iconic design. So simple as well. I think some of the best superhero costumes are the simpler ones.
Yeah, not Jack of Hearts.
No.
Not even Iron Man, that was like a nightmare with those weird saucer things that were on his shoulders.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of wonder how the guy moved around with those things, you know? Himself in the face.
Well, I mean, nowadays, you draw an Iron Man, you have to have like a, you know...
Oh, you have to have a degree in architecture.
Exactly, yeah. You need to be able to draw blueprints.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's crazy. They do get very intricate in their costume designs now.
Nowadays, it's crazy the amount of detail and texture. It's like working on a movie or something.
Yeah,
so much detail.
But they'll slide back. They did it with Superman now. Superman and Batman, they got their shorts back.
Yeah, they got the red pants. They got the red and black pants.
They got
back.
The red. Yeah, they got them back. So.
So you were talking about working on Toylands like Sectors and Transformers.
Yeah.
Was there a lot of pressure to deliver on those being, because it was linked to, you know, a toy line and promotional-wise, was a lot of pressure on that?
It didn't feel like pressure on my end, just getting the stuff done. Maybe for the editors and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I wish I got the toys. Like, I mean, that would have been nice to have the toys. You know, I would say
now.
For reference, but actually, I just want. only like Larry Hammer. He got like Transformer toys. He got all that. He got all the G.I. Joe stuff.
Of course, he did G.I. Joe. Yeah, he did G.I. Joe for a long time.
Yeah, he named those characters.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so yeah, he came up with the backstories and everything.
Yeah, it was incredible.
It's
incredible. He was so lucky.
Yeah, he was very integral to the toy line creating as well. It wasn't just I'm writing the books.
No.
He created because it wasn't originally going to be a Howling Commandos.
I think so.
He was like, right. And then they said, oh, no, we got this toy line.
Yeah, might as well do it.
Because I think Cobra is very much Hydra, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you can see the kind of G.I. Joe.
Yeah, the Hail Cobra, Hail Hydra.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's the same. It's basically, and all the characters have some similarities. Like, you know, what's the guy with the metal face? Somebody.
not Cobra Commander.
Oh, the other one. Destro.
He's
kind of like a Zemo.
That's just a weird voice in the cartoons. Yeah,
yeah. I think he's supposed to be Scottish, but yeah.
Oh, is that really?
Kind of voice, yeah. That was.
I could.
But that makes a nice segue onto something. I think this is quite close to your heart. Is the Harlem Hellfighters?
Yes.
Is that like this is like a kind of a passion project?
It was. You know, I was given it because I was working with Kanan White on Uber. And
about the taxis,
the taxis and their strikes and all that stuff that they're doing right now. Which was a really cool book to work on with him also. But he was assigned that book, and they put me on as the inker since I knew how to work over his stuff. And it was written by Max Brooks, who Mel Brooks's son, who also did World War Z. That book, great book. It was an amazing story about African Americans who wanted to fight in the war, wanted to fight for America in World War I, and they weren't allowed to, you know, don't give weapons, to African Americans and stuff like that, you know. If the ones who wanted to fight, they went overseas, they went to France, you know, they were accepted there. You know, to fight.
So they didn't go over there in an official capacity.
No,
they just went over.
I believe they just went over there. Yeah.
Wow.
To fight, and there might have been some kind of official thing.
Yeah.
Because they also told them that don't treat them too well because they got to come back, and they're not going to be treated the same way.
Yeah.
so they went through a lot of stuff. Even overseas, unfortunately, but they're very heroic. Lots of sacrifices, people sacrificing their lives for an America that at the time didn't really you know, yeah. think of them as people in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like a hell of a movie. Someone can get the rights to that movie.
They said Will Smith had it for a while.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. But I don't know. He started doing Aladdin, I guess.
I guess.
But he had, supposedly, he had the rights a while ago. So okay.
You've sold me a ticket. Already.
I would say do it. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like with the Tuskegee Airmen or the Red Tail.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what reminded me of that sort of thing. Yeah. You know, those films are great as well. Yeah. So I think there's definitely an audience for that as well. Definitely.
Yeah.
So definitely think we should see that.
Absolutely. No, it was a great book to do, you know, and it was a true story. And I have people that come up to me at my table and I would have the book out sometimes and say, is this real? Really? Yeah. This happened?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's all true story.
Yeah,
it's like a hidden history kind of thing.
Yeah, I love those kind of, you know, those kind of hidden stories we don't necessarily hear about, and then they make a movie. I'm like, why have we never heard about this? Why is this an untold tale? This should have been, you know. And then we make a movie, and everyone's like,
everyone's like,
what is this?
Wow.
Yeah, and it's like, but yeah, I think it's good to have those kind of spotlights as well for kind of the forgotten people of history, like the people that made a huge difference, but
yeah.
we don't necessarily, you know.
Know about them,
yeah. Or you know, even hear about them. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm sure if people knew that story, they would,
sure.
You know, they'd be signing up and lining up, you know, out the door for a film or even a TV series nowadays. You know, something.
Yeah, ten episode series. Netflix, yeah, they're doing a lot of that.
But yeah, I think
Netflix would be great for
that. Yeah, imagine that. Why not? Or, you know, Amazon, anything like that.
Like, I mean, I remember Banner Brothers. You know, so yeah, something like that. You know, they could do something
easy. So they can do it. It's, you know, they do it in their sleep nowadays, these things. They just knock them out. It's like, yeah, we've got Netflix money. So
yeah, what the heck? Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Netflix money.
I mean, Netflix just made a deal with Dark Horse Comics.
Oh.
So they're going to do loads of Dark Horse TV shows and stuff. So
there you go. Good, good. Yeah, they lost Marvel for that.
Yeah, they're like, okay.
They're going to do Dark
Horse. We'll take you.
Very good.
I think they've still got the Mark Miller stuff as well.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. And Dark Horse, which I did the mask.
You did the math.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's very different from the film, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. The film was like PG. And if they did something like Deadpool back then, you know, yes. That it should have been like a Deadpool.
Maybe that's what we need now, a mask, but in the style of Deadpool, you know. That winking,
yeah,
ultra violence.
That's what it was. It was crazy humor. It was a Tex Avery cartoon brought to life. You know, you had the giants, you know, like
mallets,
ships,
and
Advils falling on people's heads and stuff like that.
It's quite good because the character would be very cartoony, but the effects on the other people would be very real, very violent, very real,
horrifying.
Yeah, not a kid book. Not for kids.
No, definitely not
a kid. Stick with the movie, guys.
Yes. The movie was funny. I like Jim Carrey in it. It was good. Yeah, so
we have about 20 minutes or so left. So I'd like to open it up to these guys. Do you have any questions for Keith? Oh, hands up. Who should go first? Zach.
Cheers. Hi. We were going to collect around with John Boo. So you guys who are quite controversial at times, don't you like working with them? You have a lot of interaction as well, which is kind of.
They're all very nice. Vince Carter was a nice guy. You know, like when I was younger, you know, and I looked at his style, I was kind of like, it's like a little soft, you know, like stuff. But the thing is that he used to do things like Young Romance, stuff like that. And when he would pencil and ink his own stuff, it was like, wow, it's amazing. It was amazing. You know, when he goes over people like Jack Kirby, who's a very, really into your face kind of artist, he would kind of like mellow it down a little bit. He would take it down a few notches. So, you know, in a way, it looked good. It looked good. Yeah. I liked it. Yeah. You know, like I didn't have any problems with it. The thing is that if you need something to be done quick, you get Vince Coletta. And he may erase things. He may make things disappear, you know, like that might have been on the page before. But he'll get the book done. He'll still be readable. That was, you know, like that's why I respect him. You know,
yeah, of course. Yeah.
I really do, because he was able to get the job done. Mm. But a lot of people, you know, like,
they don't know,
you know, like how it is, and I can help, you know, like when you're working in a company like that and the deadlines the way they are, you know, it's like the inker usually gets sort of like last, or we used to. Now, I'm not sure. I think maybe the letterer gets it after us now because it's all done on computers and you don't have the lettering on the board anymore. It's like we're the last ones that we're the ones that they look at, you know, we're the ones that they'll try and get somebody else to help you out.
Right.
Doing. You don't want them to help because you want to get paid and you want to get the work, you know, you want to get all the work.
So you kind of, you can sometimes be the kind of get the blame, so to speak.
Yeah,
if they're not happy.
If it's not done totally on time. Yeah.
No. Yeah.
I mean, the colorist comes after us.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying that they're so it's not easy. No, like,
no,
I mean,
no.
But they have to knock out stuff too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm sure that they do not get a lot of sleep either.
Imagine if the deadline's as tight as you say, they're probably even under more pressure.
Yeah, sure. And at the time, they were doing it on pieces of copies of the page at comic book size. And they were using Doc Martin inks, colored inks, and were coloring in the pages and then writing what the code was for every color. Y2, RB, you know, like 6 or whatever it was, whatever. I could never read those. I never understood what those numbers were. But those would be the colors for like Spider-Man's outfit, you know, like Doctor Strange's cloak or his hair or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's amazing what they do too. But yeah. So like people like Vince or like Jack Abel or, you know, like some of the other guys that did stuff, you know, like, really fast, or yeah. It looked like it was a lot of it was for a reason. You know, like, I mean, the book has to get out. It's a business, so it's like nowadays. I don't know. I see some, you know, like some of the stuff, and maybe it doesn't come out exactly on time because the artist is taking more time. But sometimes you got to like look at it and say it's done.
Yeah.
It's done, and it's got to go out.
Yeah,
you know, you got to think of it as a business. Get the book out. That's how I had to.
Even if it's not perfect, even at least it's finished.
Yeah,
yeah,
not perfect.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Could look like it's hacked. And a lot of times people say, you're hacking it out. but you know, like, yeah, give me another month and I'll, you know, look
perfect.
Like a masterpiece, you know, but.
That's the thing they put online sometimes, don't they? They have the artist will put a thing on. It was like 5 hours, 2 minutes, 30 seconds. It shows you the quality.
The quality of the work.
It goes down in quality.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which is true.
Absolutely.
And again, if you're up against a deadline, deadline's a deadline.
Right.
You want to keep your job.
Yeah, you want to keep your job. And you want to keep your job.
Family, you want the money coming in for family.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I get
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And then the editors also know too. They know that you're doing that. So it's like, it's not like you're doing it and then you're going to think the editor's going to, this is horrible.
Yeah.
How much time do you have to do this in? 2 days for 22 pages, and it looks like no. They know what they're doing. They know what's happening.
Excellent. I saw some other hands up earlier. Yes, man with a handsome beard.
In all your years' experience, what character surprised you? Like when you saw a character through it, when you were editing, or when you're at, or when you're like coloring, what character do you look at and go, it can't be that bigger than and it looking massive? Who surprised you most? The character.
It's like it's funny because most of the characters that I've worked on were like almost like doing their thing at that time. They were already. I worked on Adam Warlock in Warlock Chronicles, and that's a really cool character, you know. But it wasn't like the kind of character they would be thinking of, oh, let's put it in a movie or something like that. Or, you know, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
But I may have done, you know, like a little bit of that, but you know, like I would never think.
Yeah, you wouldn't have thought a multi-billion-dollar franchise.
No,
I think Adam Warlock's going to be in the next one.
I'm hoping it is. I'm hoping it is.
Yeah, the cocoon. She's like, I'm going to name it Adam.
Yes. So, I got a feeling. You're probably right. And now that James Gunn is doing it again.
Yes. Thank God.
Watch and the Galaxy Volume 2, and I like a few comics, but my friend of mine's a lot more into Marvel. Watched it, showed the spoiler, and it's like, oh my god, I'm like,
yeah, who's that? Yeah,
he's going, he's flipping his suit, he can't wait for it. So,
it was the same thing with Thanos at the end of the first event. Oh, so everyone's like, right, who's that then?
Yeah, I was spinning around like crazy. Oh,
who's the purple dude? I was
like, yes,
don't worry, I'll
really?
5 minutes on the way, I'm about to
the smile, the little smile at the end.
I prefer those teasers because it makes me feel like validated in my comic book nerdiness. Nobody else knows who that is.
The only reason I knew Thanos was because Marvel vs. Capcom.
Ah, yes.
Oh,
very good. That's a great. Yeah, it's that guy. Huge. Cool. Was it? Did you work on the? Because the original Guardians were like from the 30th century.
Oh no! No. They might have appeared in one of the books that I was working on. But that's about as close as I got to them.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I think that's the one group that I never thought would actually
take off.
Take off at all?
Yeah.
You know.
Crazy.
Star Lord, and I love Star Lord. I love the incarnation of it. in the comic books, you know, again, in the black and white books.
Yeah, John Byrne did work on that original version.
Yes, and, and I love that stuff. That it's not exactly the same kind of character,
No,
but
it's definitely not.
None of them are, actually, you know, because the Drac Destroyer that's in the movie, would the one in the comic book would have destroyed Thanos.
Yeah, definitely, within 5 minutes. He was created. He was like created by a god to destroy. Yes, that was his one thing.
Exactly. So there are changes, you know, but
huge.
but it was they turned out to be incredible.
Yeah, definitely. Any other questions? Yes.
Can you ask me about quality powers between 1980s comics and the 2000s? There's one thing that I noticed on the 80s comics, this really close in panel. You can see that rise of the dots. Always wonders.
Oh yeah,
these dots.
The screens. There are different colors that put together will make that certain color that you see there. The little dots. Yes. They're all like screen that are all put together and they create those colors from the printer. At when the printer goes and that's how it was printed at that time. And then you had flexograph, which was horrifying because that was the stuff that they used on cardboard boxes of cereals and stuff like that. But it didn't look good at all on comic book inside in the inside pages. You might have a great cover on the outside, but the inside of the book, it was horrible. It's like these garish colors of yellow and red. The press that it was on was made of plastic. It wasn't even metal. It wasn't a metal press. So after a while, the press would heat up. So the plastic would start to melt a little bit. So you would start to lose little lines. You weren't able to ink very intricate line on a comic book at that point because sometimes it would come out squiggly because of the melting process, or it would disappear at all. You would lose people's noses, some of the lips and stuff. No, things would disappear after a while during the printing. And you wouldn't have the screen dots as much, but it just looked awful. And that's what Web of Spider-Man was for a while. Mm-hmm. They had those colors on there. I was like, oh, please stop. Please put it back to normal, you know.
I mean they kind of use that. Do you see Into the Spider-Verse?
Yes.
Great
yeah.
film.
Yeah, and they use the screen.
They
use
the
screen
dots
there.
Dots,
yeah,
they kind of
yeah.
color and the sound effect.
Yeah,
my favorite sound effect was when he throws the bagel. It hits the guy and says bagel.
It's
my favorite bit. The whole film. And they had the comics code on the front. Of the
movie. At the beginning. Yeah, that was so great.
It felt like a comic, but it's the most like that a film has ever felt like a comic book come to life. For
yes,
me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those flipping pages and all that.
That was my favorite Spider-Man movie.
I think it's everybody's now. It's the Oscar-winning Spider-Man movie.
Absolutely. Yes.
Incredible.
Who,
you know, who
could have
who
topped
knew?
That?
Who knew? Yeah, another film I didn't expect to take off as well as it did.
This is true. This is true for Sony.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they just released Venom.
Yeah, right.
Which wasn't well received, but it still made a lot of money.
I'm okay with Venom. It was weird watching how he was, you know, like talking to himself as he was going. But it was cool too.
So a bit different. I didn't mind it myself.
Yeah,
I've seen a lot worse comic book movies out there.
But it wasn't the origin of Venom.
No.
The origin of Venom.
Spider-Man wasn't involved.
Yeah, Spider-Man was involved, and so was Reed Richards.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
In the
Secret
Wars thing, yes.
Yeah, because the first time he realizes it's alive is Reed Richards tells him.
Right, that he's a symbiote.
Yeah. He goes, that's a symbiote. And he's like, what? My suit's alive?
He's pulling it.
And they use like a sonic gun to get off, and he's in the tube. And then in Web of Spider-Man number one, it escapes that tube, doesn't it?
And comes after him,
It's right. Church pulling it off.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing. So you got all those links. You got all those links to all these amazing characters.
Yeah. Incredible. Yeah, I'd like to get into one of those free movie things that go in those premieres. You know, I'm touching all
you've
this
like,
stuff and like,
you're like, I've worked on this. Let me.
Yeah. That'd be nice. You know, just give me some popcorn from you.
Like Stan Lee goes to the wedding and he's like turned away.
Yeah. You know. That's not right.
Yeah. Any other questions, guys? Still got a little bit of time. Anything you want to ask? Yes.
What's it like kind of living in the New York area and working in comics in like the 70s and 80s when Marvel and DC were done?
It was great. Yeah, Marvel and DC. Yeah. I've gone up to both of them in the city. It was great because we would have, especially when I was an assistant editor, we would have lunchtime where we would take the artists or the writers out to lunch, and we would go to these places. It was great. You know, we had the Marvel card. You were able to go out to lunch and have like these amazing, incredible lunches.
Did everyone know what that was? Did everyone know what the Marvel card was?
Yeah, the Marvel. It's like, you know, you get one of these Visa cards. You know, the editors have them, and you know, like you go out and you take the guy out to lunch. We would go out to these places that would have like these dishes that have like these micro meals things, and cost ridiculous amount of money. And you know, like, so I went to restaurants that I probably would have never gone to, like in my real life. So that was great being up there with. And the bullpen, you know, like being up there with them at Marvel, it was like a family kind of thing. It was really cool. Like everybody was, you know, like friends with everybody else, you know, just all, you know, like hang out together, you know, like in there. Or, you know, like if you know, go into one of the editorial offices and sit down for a while and you know, like just shoot the breeze. And,
yeah.
Or play practical jokers.
I think that's the Marvel bullpen did really well at kind of bridging the gap between the books and the fans. They're trying to, you know, jazzy John Romita and Smiley yeah. Stanley and stuff. They tried to make them involved. There's a Merry March in Marvel Society, yeah. mm-hmm. things like that, you know. And I don't think DC did that as much back in the day. I think they do it more now.
Mm.
But back in the day, you know, they tried to make the creators a big part of the books, a big part of people's lives as well. I think right, really,
yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. When I visited DC, I met people like Carmine Infantino. And Dick Giordano. I worked with him as a background artist on Mad Dog.
Yeah, it looks like the hockey mask.
Yeah, the one with the hockey mask, like the on Arrow.
Yeah, that character.
So I worked with him on that, and you know, I got no, they're good guys too. It's just that it's a different kind of atmosphere, you know. It felt like it was a little bit more, maybe a little bit more corporate at DC.
More of a business. Was it more? Come in, do your job.
More hijinks, kind of stuff. got a little weird every once in a while, you know. But it was fun, and you still had to do your work, and you did your work.
Yeah.
But it was fun doing it too. Stay after hours, and like just like I said, shoot the breeze and stuff like that. If you had work, you had to do. You just do your work.
Fair enough. Handsome beardy man.
Was there a massive dramatic difference between DC and Marvel?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, that was basically it. It was it was much more corporate. And I also had to learn something when I was going from one company to the other. I would have a Marvel jacket. And I'd wear that, you know, get Marvel and everything, and went up to DC with the Marvel. Can you take off the Marvel jacket? All right. I said, what? What's the most? They're two different companies. It's going to be. No. Take it. Even though the people that are telling me to take it off are the people that also worked at Marvel at some time in the past, you know, but.
Gotta keep it separate.
Gotta keep it separate. Absolutely.
The war continues.
Yes.
Never really stops. Why can't we all just get along?
There was a while when they were joining together and they actually did have those crossovers with that.
Marvel versus DC. So,
yeah.
Really good. Right. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
It's a bit different. You wouldn't see that now. I don't think you
would
see that.
No, it's not happening.
No, it's very separate.
It's not happening.
Twain, never the twain shall meet.
I don't think so. Not for a while. No, I don't think so. Unfortunately.
Any other questions, guys? This is your chance. Why not?
As you find any comic book, does you like working with comic book environment now? You know, how different is it when you first started? Is it, let's tell you, like, passing different, or is it a bit more easier to do job recently?
Well, it's different now, basically because of technology. So you have things like Photoshop. Photoshop, which could enhance a person's pencils and make them dark enough so that they could be inked. So that leaves out inkers a lot of times. And you know, I got out of the line of work because, you know, it's less expensive, you know, if the pencil does all the work sometimes. You know, like it all depends on who the person is, I guess. It's a story, you know, I can have it's a big name guy, you know, like that's sorry, they'll get money. But mostly so the inkers sometimes gets left out. They would sometimes try and do inking in either manga or clip art studio. Which I've tried also, and I could do it. But the thing is that I really do believe you need the background to do it on paper first, know how to do it, and then you can carry that over, you know.
Classically trained.
Yeah, you should. Yeah, which I know there isn't too many, you know, like classically trained people up in the companies anymore, sitting around or being there, you know, doing something. Jack Abel was there, John Romita was there, you know, there was all these guys that that were working, you know, like maybe at first even in advertising where, you know, you really had deadlines, stuff like that, and you learned the work ethic, and then you brought it into comic books and you kept that work ethic, and then they would hand it down to us, you know, like, and tell us what we should do and how we should do things. And now it's like, because of how things are and how, you know, like technology could grab somebody from a distance and get their pages in Blue Line and have them sent over to somebody else in Blue Line somewhere else so they can ink it and then send that, that you don't get to see anybody anymore. You know, you don't get to talk and see anybody. You don't get to talk to the older guys that are out there, you know, that know how to do stuff.
Yeah.
Camaraderie's gone. Yeah. I mean, it's great when you have this.
Yeah.
When you have these conventions so that we can actually talk to each other and say, hey, how you been? Like, I don't even know what you look like. Great, you know? But, you know, like this, and so, you know, like I'm really, you know, thankful for, you know, like actually these conventions. You know, it's the only time you get to, you know, like really see each other.
Yeah. You know, meet up, hang out.
Yeah. There were people like Joe Sennett who maybe would not come down to the offices and you wouldn't see them, you know, like until their semi retirement party, something like that, you know. But,
well, on that note, we're going to have to end.
Yes.
Everyone give Keith a big round of applause. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.